Welcome to Managing Uncertainty, a podcast series from the experts at BrightPath discussing global risk, business continuity, and crisis management. Will you be ready to lead your organization through its critical moment?
Hello and welcome to the Managing Uncertainty podcast, Brightcast edition for the week of August 26th, 2019. I'm Brian Strauser, Principal and CEO here at BrightPath.
I'm Bray Wheelard, Consultant at BrightPath.
We're going to start off the Brightcast edition today by talking about Tropical Storm Dorian. And we're recording this episode on Monday, so this information may be a little more dated by the time that you hear it. But Tropical Storm Dorian is currently in the Caribbean. It is moving at a north-northwest track right now. It is currently several hundred miles to the southwest, southeast rather, of Cuba and the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. Kind of four key messages here that we're hearing from FEMA and the National Hurricane Center, and that is that Dorian is expected to bring tropical storm conditions to portions of the Lesser Antilles Islands on Monday and Tuesday. Tropical storm watches and warnings are currently in effect for those islands. Hurricane conditions are possible in portions of the Windward Islands, and a hurricane watch has now been issued for St. Lucia. Residents and companies in those areas should refer to advice from local government officials and products from their local meteorological service for more info. The National Hurricane Center expects that Dorian will produce 3 to 8 inches of rainfall from St. Martinique to St. Vincent, including Barbados, with isolated totals as high as 10 inches in portions of the northern Windward Islands. The risk of direct impacts from wind and rainfall have increased over the last few days for Puerto Rico and Hispaniola. Interest in those areas should monitor the progress of Dorian, and tropical storm or hurricane watches will be likely required later today, as in today on Monday. Any potential impacts from Dorian in the Bahamas or Florida later this week are highly uncertain, given the potential for this system to interact with high terrain of other islands. We know that FEMA has activated the National Response Coordination Center in Washington, D.C. The FEMA private sector office is activating the National Business Emergency Operations Center, or NBEOC, and FEMA's NBEOC members now have access to the portal where FEMA is sharing information. And I know from checking in there earlier today, tons of states in the southeast, eastern United States, particularly Florida, are at a watch state and are carefully monitoring what's going on. And of course, the government of Puerto Rico, despite being in some recent upheaval, is also kind of on full alert here as the storm moves in their direction.
Brian, what are some of the typical agenda things that they're starting to talk about as they kind of activate?
Well, it looks like they're going to have the first call tomorrow. This is FEMA with the private sector community. So those are joint calls held between the National Business Emergency Operations Center, which is at FEMA in the National Response and Recovery Center, and the National Infrastructure Coordinating Center, or the NIC at DHS, which kind of coordinates infrastructure protection across the United States. So these calls are typically weather forecast, and this is straight from the mouth. It's straight from the horse's mouth. It's straight from the National Hurricane Center and the National Weather Service explaining what they're seeing and what they're predicting, and they can go from macro to micro on those forecasts and do. And then there's usually a pretty good discussion about what FEMA and DHS are doing with the states and territories in this case. And then there's usually some kind of update from the impacted states or territories. Although honestly, during Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rico didn't get on these calls. It was being relayed through FEMA's folks on the ground.
Okay.
Rather than them being directly on there. At least the calls I were on, and I was on most of the Hurricane Maria calls because we had clients that were impacted in Puerto Rico. And then there's usually representation from some of the DHS cross-sector coordinating councils, sector coordinating councils, where a business representative usually provides some kind of update. Like we're often talking a lot about energy, utilities and electrical power.
Sure.
Healthcare. So we have ASPR from HHS, the Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Emergency Response, someone from their team over at HHS. So they own all the healthcare emergency response. And then it just depends. I mean, when it comes to if Puerto Rico and the other U.S. territories, the U.S. Virgin Islands, are impacted, as it appears they're going to be, there'll probably be a lot of Coast Guard, because the Coast Guard is going to be focused on making sure the ports are open, the ports are safe, that we can get transportation in. And then, you know, the big thing with Maria, the response to Hurricane Maria, that was supplies needed to come in via barge or ship from the U.S. mainland. It's 1,000 miles to get to Puerto Rico, and the airfield was in horrendous shape. The other challenge with Maria at the time, 2 years ago, is that we had been in such a response mode from the two previous major, like two of the biggest hurricanes ever. Here comes Maria, which is bigger. I mean, the warehouse was empty, right? And the warehousing on Puerto Rico in particular had been used for previous hurricanes. So there wasn't the kind of stuff in theater that you would expect to have. That's not true in this case. The stuff is there. FEMA, the update I saw this morning, they had USAR task forces, and this is an urban search and rescue. A lot of the other kind of first line in folks were either already in Puerto Rico or they were staged to be moved to Puerto Rico through military resources post landfall. So I think we're in a different response situation than as a country than we were 2 years ago. But again, Puerto Rico is 1,000 miles off the coast. So are the rest of the U.S. Virgin Islands. It's a long haul to that supply chain as opposed to a domestic.
Right.
I say domestic, an incident within the lower 48.
Yeah.
It'd be like Hawaii and Alaska. It wouldn't be any different. It would be hard to get resources there quickly.
Sure.
In an incident. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. I didn't go through the detailed FEMA update this morning.
Is there anything companies should be thinking about or preparing even to kind of help assist or just have things lined up?
So I think there's a couple things. One is to take a look at your operations in Puerto Rico and make sure that you're prepared for disruption there, not just in terms of tropical storm or hurricane coming in and what that could do to your infrastructure, but also go back to the lessons of Maria and what could this mean in terms of losing power, using utility power, water, staff, transportation and logistics. These were all big challenges in Maria. The Puerto Rican electrical utility setup is not very resilient. It certainly has improved from its pre-Maria days, but it's not fully rebuilt. There's a lot of challenges there. And then I think, you know, we've got to be honest, the government of Puerto Rico as a territory has been in some significant upheaval. Mm-hmm. Over the last few weeks, the governor resigned in a scandal. They appointed a new governor. The Puerto Rican Supreme Court ruled that appointment was unconstitutional and tossed him. And now they have a new governor. And I believe also someone refused. The lieutenant governor refused the job.
I believe so.
So we're on to governor number 4. So there's just a lot of upheaval and uncertainty there. But at the same time, there's a huge FEMA presence in Puerto Rico. So, and there's also some really good emergency management leadership in Puerto Rico and have been there since Maria. So I'm cautiously optimistic of what this looks like. This also doesn't appear to be, I mean, Maria was a massive Cat right. 5 storm. This is not that either. But Puerto Rico's resiliency situation is it's challenged.
Yeah.
So those are things companies need to be, you know, just go back to your lessons from Maria and be prepared to manage through those disruptions. And I would plan to stage personnel and supplies that you can get in via ship or air for post-landfall.
So next up, topic-wise, we just wanted to touch on kind of the major world event that's going on right now, in particular, that's sucking up quite a bit of the news, is the 2019 G7 summit that's being held in France. Some of the objectives that they had for the summit kind of going into it was fighting inequality, whether that's gender inequality, access to education, health services. They were also talking about reducing environmental inequality through climate finance, preserving biodiversity, the oceans, strengthening social dimensions of globalization for kind of fair trade, tax, development policies, taking action for peace against security threats and terrorism, and then tapping into opportunities created by digital technology and artificial intelligence. So really some of the main, I mean, that's some pretty high bar objectives, but really what
I was going to say, that was some pretty highfalutin stuff right there.
Uh-huh. Really what they were talking about, I think what dominated kind of the conversation was a lot of kind of trade talk, certainly between the U.S. and China, kind of casting a shadow over those conversations. They were also talking about taxes on technology companies, and that was kind of the main focus of the technology conversation. They were also talking about some of the geopolitical stuff that's going on, including Ukraine, Libya. But I think where it got real interesting was Iran and the Iranian nuclear question and the promotion of peace and stability in the region, which kind of took the U.S. a little bit by surprise. They weren't expecting that an Iranian delegate was invited and showed up to the meeting.
It was Iranian foreign minister. Is that correct?
I believe so.
And my understanding, at least from U.S. media, is that the United States was not told of this individual's invitation or presence. So an interesting move there by the French.
Yes. And a lot of the media conversation was kind of directed at kind of a one-on-one meeting that France and Iran had kind of amongst the G7 agenda that was going on. And then kind of lastly, kind of a topic-wise, so really, before I get to that one, really the G7, you know, is that it's that major kind of annual meeting with kind of the top seven GDP economies in the world, minus Russia, who was kicked out. President Trump asked that they be brought back in. So that was kind of part of some discussion. But really, that summit touches on a lot of topics. It's one of the major kind of meeting points for a lot of these world leaders. A lot of folks, dignitaries from Secretary General of the United Nations, the President of the European Union, World Trade Organization, World Bank, kind of all those major leaders are also invited to attend. And so it's a lot of kind of touch point on some of these issues. Next year, it's in the United States. So often what we see with the G7 summit as well is protests and an opportunity for folks to get some counter messages out. There was some protest activity this year. Didn't make a whole lot of media, but definitely going into next year, hosted by the United States in an election year, there's a potential that, you know, could become an issue that companies need to kind of plan around depending on where it's hosted.
Do we know where it's going to be hosted?
We don't know where it's hosted yet. The president has indicated he'd like it at one of his properties.
Of course he would.
But they haven't named a location as of yet.
I recall that there was it a G7, G8 meeting, or was it a NATO meeting that was supposed to be in Chicago that wound up being moved many years back?
I think it was a WTO.
You're right.
Might have been a WTO, yeah. I believe. That
you're right.
Getting moved.
You're right. But there was like some serious protest activity around mm-hmm. that. And what was the meeting in Seattle many years ago?
WTO.
That was WTO as well. I could see, given president, you know, the polarization around the president, that this could be a significant protest event in an election year if it was held in a major urban center.
Yeah, well, and especially whatever the topics of conversation end up kind of being arrived on during that time will probably most definitely be a forum for protest.
So the Iranian conversation at the G7 was wide-ranging. Mm-hmm. You had the UK and US really wanting to address the issue of maritime security in the Persian Gulf, and we've talked about that previously here. You have the nuclear issue with Iran going on. We also had, there was discussion about Hong Kong. And, you know, the Hong Kong, we're not going to dwell on the Hong Kong protest here, but there was continued escalation this weekend. It looks like the three big things that went on is that protesters formed a human chain throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
There was at least one incident where it's alleged that protesters were chasing police. The police were cornered in one situation and they drew their weapons. And I have seen a photo of that.
Yep.
That I believe that was Associated Press or Reuters had out. And then in one case, they're claiming that the police fired their weapons, not at people, but like up in the air or whatever. Definitely not a U.S. law enforcement kind of situation that you hear too much about.
No.
But in addition, that the law enforcement was using water cannons for the first time to quell protesters and move them out of some areas. So I think that the situation in Hong Kong remains unresolved.
Yep.
There was, I thought, an interesting article over the weekend in one of the London papers about a meeting of many business leaders and former government leaders with Carrie Lam, the chief executive for Hong Kong, where they advised her she needed to find a way out of this mess. The business leaders are, of course, are concerned about disruption, and they're somewhat fearful of direct intervention by Chinese authorities. And she refused to back down. She gave very succinct no's several times in the conversation. This, of course, was being leaked by someone. This was not open to the press.
Right. It obviously doesn't bode well in the short term for protest activity, as it's getting leaked out that, you know, protesters are only going to feel more passionate probably about the protest thing.
More emboldened.
Right.
I think to in the path that they're on.
Well, and even sort of kind of piggyback on some of the activity too, there was reports that they were even beginning to cut down towers that they believed were facial recognition towers.
So that's right.
They're going to the point of they're taking out infrastructure that they believe is going to be used against them, not in the intended, probably positive way of what that some of that technology is, but they're definitely, you know, the use of water cannons is definitely a different tactic, which means the situation is not kind of becoming more under control as probably folks had hoped kind of last week as things kind of calmed down and there was kind of a little bit of a mea culpa by the protesters kind of following the airport stuff that they tried to kind of calm down and kind of put a new face on everything. Clearly that's not going to be kind of the MO going forward. The fact that police are using the water cannons, that there's destruction of infrastructure, there is Carrie Lam's refusal to back down. We've kind of been talking about it for weeks. This will likely continue for weeks. I mean, the big piece for companies, I think, is just to continue to monitor and stay on this.
And plan. Make sure
and
that your plans ready. Are, you're ready to execute. I mean, when they're out in the streets with angle grinders taking down cameras that they think are facial recognition, it's not going away in the short term.
They're committed to the bit. Yeah, I would just say that, you know, kind of on the plan front too for companies, be prepared with a few different scenarios. Take some time with your different teams and representatives and think through if there is another shutdown, what are we doing? If there is a Chinese insertion, what are we doing? Just think through some of those kind of big moments that have the potential to happen and start thinking about what would be our first few steps that we would do in that situation, and that at least gives you something to start running on.
And how quickly can you execute that?
Right.
It's not a bad time to think about a crisis exercise or a tabletop to kind of game through some of the possibilities that could happen and make sure that you're prepared and more importantly, that your crisis team and your partners and your folks on the ground in Hong Kong are prepared as well. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty podcast. We'll be back on Monday with a deep dive into an interesting topic. Hope to hear from you then.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Managing Uncertainty, produced by the experts at BrightPath. To receive notifications of new episodes, join our newsletter at brightpath.com or subscribe to your favorite podcast player, such as iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about the services and trusted advice from BrightPath by visiting brightpath.com. That's BrightPath.com.